From Chiron Return and for the Pacifica Radio Network, welcome to Planet Waves FM. Tonight's is a special edition for Saturday, the 10th of February, 2024. Welcome to our program, wherever you may be in the world, in the future, or in your state of mind. It is good to be with you on this first day of the year of the Green Dragon, which also happens to be my 60th year. And we began tonight with Where Has the Time Gone from the Dead South's brand new release, Chains and Stakes, which came out on Friday, the day of the new moon. I wasn't aware that the Dead South had a new record coming out, but it is perfectly thrilling to be here doing what I can do in support of these guys' latest release. They are a hard-working bunch of musicians. They are just famous enough to have a following to support a modest international tour coming up, basically about to happen any day now, and I will have a few more selections from Chains and Stakes through tonight's special edition program. I have been working through the week on a regular edition of Planet Waves FM with all of the usual endless agony of the world soft-pedaled by your friendly neighborhood astrologer, putting the spiritual spin on the terrors and horrors of the 21st century. And I woke up today and thought, all right, I'm going to just do something different. I've got nothing special that has to happen. And so I had a really fun day, actually, which I would love to tell you about. I am born in 1964, the year of the Green Dragon, the Wood Dragon, and as Dia, down at the business office, a Chinese astrologer, she's not Chinese, but she's a Chinese astrologer, tells me that this is also known as the year of the Laughing Dragon, i.e. the Wood Dragon is known as the Laughing Dragon, which I guess partly accounts for why I am such a prankster, and why April Fool's Day can turn up any random day. And so I've been watching this approach for a long time. In Chinese medicine, Chinese astrology, the 60th year is an important point of closure. I think it is viewed as being a fully fledged adult. You have gone through the cycle of 12 animals and 5 elements, returning to your animal and your element at age 60, if you're fortunate to make it that far. I think China's a fairly long-lived culture. They have better medicine there than we do, or at least they have had it over the thousands of years of their history. And so I imagine more of them have lived to age 60 through the many centuries that have preceded today than in the West, although the West is kind of a new concept, but Europe really is, I guess, Greece and all those places. So let's see, had a kind of a date. The best sex I have usually is in my imagination, and then every now and then the content of my imagination manifests in some similar but better form in real life, and that happened today. I will skip the personal details, except to say that it was tremendous fun and made all the more so this being New Year's. And then from there, I just sat down in my car and decided where I might want to go and headed west toward the Ashokan Reservoir. I had a couple of options for where I might get to be outside a bit. It was a really beautiful day today, about 50 degrees, quite unseasonably warm, partly cloudy with a high overcast and just really lovely breathable air. It's been very cold in New York for the past few weeks, so it's nice to be outside and be breathing easy. So I headed for the, I guess they're called the Middle Dikes of the Ashokan Reservoir. I haven't done a program on the anatomy of the Ashokan, but there's one huge dam which blocks the Esopus, and then there's a diversity of kind of bounding dams which don't specifically block a creek or a river, and those are called dikes. I think this is called the Middle Dikes. There's another name for it. I've gone on various rampages of finding all the old maps and studying them and finding the names of these things. And the Ashokan being a persistent source of fascination for me, it's hard not to think about the 12 towns that used to be down at the bottom along that kind of river valley, beautiful valley. But I have slowly learned to set that bit aside and just appreciate the land for what it is today. That tells you something about the power of samskaras, of latent past impressions, how influential they can be. And, you know, I'm someone who has a tendency to take on the burdens of the world, though I'm not the only person troubled by the history of the Ashokan. Nonetheless, it is absolutely stunning, stunning man-made lake. And before I went to the what's called the Panhandle parking area, I thought I would stop and visit, I guess it's called the Stone Church Gorge. It is absolutely stunning gorge that the, I forget which of the creeks, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared with all this geography, but it was one of the main places where the creek that was dammed ran, if I got that right. Anyway, it's right below the spillway. So there's a thing called the spillway where excess water from this 123 billion gallon lake is allowed to run off from in large quantities from time to time, and I thought I'd pay it a visit. I hadn't been there since, I think, around October, on the day of the test of the emergency broadcast system over cell phones. Remember that day? Kind of gone and forgotten. I decided to hang out by this gorge for the test, leaving a video camera trained on my cell phone on my desk back in the office. And anyway, hadn't been there since, so I just took a look and appreciated this absolutely beautiful thing and took 60 seconds of video explaining what it was. And it's really a fantastic kind of a miniature canyon. By miniature, I mean like the walls are maybe 200 feet high, the canyon walls with a nice flow churning through from some remaining melt off. And then I headed up around 28A to the Panhandle, and I wasn't going to go there. I was thinking of going on what's called the Quarry Walk. It's like a very nice 2-mile hike, not a lot of effort needed, no scaling cliffs or anything like that. And something said, pull in, make that right turn into the Panhandle. So I did, and this turned out to be good guidance. So I parked and put on my Boston Red Sox hat and my kind of gradient Ray-Bans. I was in my I don't want to be contacted mode that I get into every now and then, even though I can't help being friendly every now and then. I want to kind of tuck myself behind the brim of a baseball cap and a pair of sunglasses and just pretend that, no one can see me. And so I went out, strolling out onto the Middle Dikes, and on the way back. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning, and the reflection of the sky in the water was just really special. And then I got to a certain point, and it was it had been kind of warm and a little bit stuffy, and then all of a sudden the air changed. Like I took one step and it was completely different air. It was suddenly like fresh natural air conditioning cascading off of the surface of the reservoir, and I watched this beautiful reflection that was enhanced by the ripples of the breeze. So it was kind of impressionistic. And I turned around, and there was a guy and his wife kind of walking. Well, they were walking in the opposite direction, and I stopped and made a joke about how he was the only one skiing today because he was walking on two kind of long walker poles. And he said, "Yeah, well, in fact, the reason I'm walking with these poles was a skiing accident from 4 years ago." Being the neighborhood Chiron astrologer, I'm always willing to hear people's stories of their injuries and their healing process. And so I learned about that and his spinal injury. Then I found out that he's a therapist in Kingston, but mostly works from home. And I found out that he knew my teacher and therapist, Joseph Crusoe. So we had a nice conversation that went on for a while. And I took his number and email and gave him a Chiron return coin, those beautiful green and gold coins that I always keep in my pocket. And every good conversation gets a coin. So that was a good conversation. By that, I mean, I learned something, or it's especially friendly or warm or something, and or meaningful, and I leave the person I'm speaking with one of these beautiful 1¾-inch. It's kind of it's got a three-dimensional relief sculpture of Chiron and set against a green background. And so I've been having a lot of fun giving these out for the past year or so. I've got a coin story coming up a little bit later in the show besides this one. So we said thank you, and that was lovely, and have an awesome day. And I headed back toward the Panhandle parking lot, and there at the right at the end before the kind of 9/11 barricades, these pillars that were put up that block traffic from getting onto what used to be a road that ran alongside the reservoir. And then in the wake of the 9/11 incident, everything got fortified, or better, I guess, hardened is the proper word. And there was a lot of money, you know, since they plunged the country into several $1 trillion of additional debt. After 9/11, part of that money went to fortify, harden the Ashokan Reservoir. Now, the cool thing about that was that it stopped vehicular traffic, and then at the end, on either end, there are these of the dike. There are these pillars that are about 12 inches thick, and that you know you really could not drive a truck through them. But anyway, at the edge of that, leaning against the guardrail, right before those security pillars was an old fellow, and I was now I'm warming up and not quite needing to, look like I'm posing for TMZ, stopped and talked to him and said hello. And turns out that this fellow's named Steve Abrams, something of a noted harmonica player. And he, too, had a kind of a cane or a walker. And he said, yeah, you know, it's today's the second time that I've been out of the house after, by way of what a lovely day it is. The second time he'd been out of the house in something like, I think he said 7 months. His wife came along later, Nancy, and said that it was more like 9 months or something. But anyway, he was finally set free, was able to walk, and had experienced a very serious injury from tripping over the concrete lip of his fireplace that had extended out and up about 1 inch, and came down hard and had to have his femur replaced and his shoulder replaced in one operation. Turns out he's 85 years old. And we spent probably 45 minutes telling music stories of learning and playing and different people we know. And then he said he was from Brooklyn. And anybody who says that they're from Brooklyn, the first thing I say is, what high school did you go to? Because like a lot of places, not a lot of places have as many high schools as Brooklyn, but the city is kind of organized in a kind of a culture of high school. So, you know, that's how you know if someone's likely to know someone. He said he went to James Madison. I said my mom went to James Madison. So his wife graduated the same year as my mom. Didn't remember my mom, Camille Cacciatore. She came into the conversation quite a bit later, but not before we had talked about all facets of harmonica playing and learning guitar. And I told some fun stories from my musical life. Everyone knew Carole King because Carole also went to Madison and was born in 42, I believe. So I went out for this walk to reflect on my life and the good fortune of my life. I'm now officially in 60th year completed mode with the beginning of the year of the Laughing Dragon. My birthday is not until Pisces time in March, but I've decided to start the process early because it is officially Chinese New Year, and so watching this coming a long time. So I took this walk with the idea of just reflecting a bit. Nice reflection to reflect near. And ended up meeting these two older men, one 80. Dan is 80, and Steve, I guess he's either 84 or 85. Born in 39, so that would make him, well, anyway, I always have to do that on paper. And so I see, I spent a good bit of time with these fellows and had a kind of a look at the far end of the life cycle of two, I think, eminently respectable, kind, sincere men. And heard of their troubles and also of their kind of the beauty of their lives. And it's a good thing that I turned down that exit toward the panhandle off of 28A. It's not really an exit. It's kind of a little branch in the road, and met them and got exactly what I was looking for in terms of not only reflecting on my own and considering my life. That particular piece of reservoir is where I brought Jonah in the last days of his life to return him to the universe. Bundled him up and took him there and thought about Jonah and many things that I have to be thankful for. And then met these guys who reminded me that, you know, there is a journey ahead, and there may be difficult patches, almost inevitably, but you keep going through them. And I was astonished to find that Steve was 84. I mean, it's some people, they're like, they're kind of old, but you don't really necessarily put a number on it. But he underwent this surgery, you know, in his 80s, in one operation, replaced his femur and his shoulder. And, you know, what incredible perseverance. But mostly we talked about music, and he taught me a lot without a harmonica present. I had my first harmonica lesson because he's primarily a harpist and then a guitar player. And he said, well, you know, the blessing inside of being laid up for 7 months, whatever it was that all of his friends came and jammed with him and, you know, brought him harmonicas and visited him on these musical visits. So I hope to pay him one of those musical visits sometime soon. Overall, a lovely day. I came home and kind of tidied up my place a little bit and thought about what I was going to do with the program. And the truth is simply that I had some very serious topics planned, and I will most likely do the show that I was planning for tomorrow in a week. Could take a week to prepare it. Stuff about the World Court hearing. Well, South Africa basically sued Israel to get it to stop bombing the Palestinians, and a number of other things. The Robert F. Kennedy campaign. And I thought, you know, I'm just feeling really good today, and I do not feel like, first of all, doing all this homework this weekend. I have essentially a clipboard full of materials fact-checking the Wall Street Journal article and other things. And I thought, you know, not this weekend. I'm just not really feeling like doing this kind of homework all weekend. And I thought, all right, let's talk to you on Saturday night. The purpose of this program is a meeting place. I know that there are those of you who come here because you know that you can't find what I do anyplace else, and I can't find what I do anyplace else. I'm not even sure there was a bygone era of radio where this was the way that it was done, but there was a guy back on WPLJ when I was a teenager named Father Bill Ayers. Not the Bill Ayers, famous for Barack Obama and various political stuff. During my spell listening to the program, he quit being a priest and I guess got married, and the show continued. It was the Sunday night program on WPLJ, you know, one of the top rock stations in the New York FM market. And I never missed a week of that program because it was just a place where people would come and talk, and everything was conducted in this laid-back, sincere vibe. Bill was my model for radio. I called him maybe about 5 or 6 years ago and thanked him for his exceptional example of what you can do in the radio medium. So when I started my program on WDST Radio Woodstock, I chose that same Sunday night at 11 o'clock time slot because I thought this is the perfect time for, to speak to a slightly more quiet world. And also did that during my spell on Radio Kingston. So the program seems to have found its way back to Sunday night exception, the exception being this week. But apropos of that, I'm very fond of a YouTube podcast by a guy named Rick Beato, former rock musician, then now retired record producer. Then he's been a YouTuber for the past 6 years. And because he knows everyone, he scores these fabulous interviews. And he was talking about how he was talking about his fascination with farewell to YouTubing videos by people with millions of followers, where they just finally decide they've had enough YouTubing. And he said he has this fascination with these farewell videos. And he said the way that he keeps his sanity is he doesn't work on a schedule. He'll do live casting at any time, unannounced. He will release his videos whenever he feels like it. He'll make them unscheduled. And I thought, well, that actually is that's actually a pretty good idea. But I'm a little bit too much of a journalist, and also I think that part of the meeting place is a kind of reliability and showing up. And so I come here for the same reason that many of you come here, which is a place of reflection and thoughtful reflection in a world where it really just seems like, you know, the bubble could burst any day. There's just this tense background of, I think, the byproduct of a kind of a feeding frenzy going on amongst the loose affiliation of billionaires and trillionaires. Let's continue with the Dead South's new release, Chains and Stakes, Contemporary Bluegrass. And this song is called Son of Ambrose.
My name is William and I'm the son of Ambrose. I was born near that cast iron bridge. My mother Alice, she taught me to be a kind man. So I took it and shared it with my friends. I went to war at the age 21. I came back with my memories and my gun. Took care of the family, my brother too. Bare knuckle boxing every day at noon. When I came back from war, there was something missing there. I had a finger so naked and so bare. Where would I ever find my one true love? If I'm just patient, she'll come from above. One day the neighbors, I caught a flare. I fell in love with that Norwegian glare. We had a hippie, a cowboy and a scholar, a little tomboy and a toddler too. In 1947, I did my best. Started what you see before you and I stood the test. Life ain't always easy, in fact it's pretty tough. Hope you learned a thing or two about how I raised you up, cause it's the best damn thing I ever done. That was a cold year, 1977. Left you all when I'd been gone to heaven. Never got to say goodbye, never got to give you hugs. Just remember, I love you all so much.
Phyllis and I made her my bride. Had a family with five kids. Most beautiful damn thing I ever did. Yeah, oh, in 1947 I met my wife. Her name is Phyllis and I made her my bride. Had a family with five kids. Most beautiful damn thing I ever did. Yeah, oh, my family, it'll be alright. Just hold on each other through this life. Oh, my family, it'll be alright. Keep shining all night.
Regina, Saskatchewan, the Dead South, Nathaniel Hiltz, Scott Pringle, Colton, Crawdaddy Crawford, and Danny Kenyon. Wow. So, putting out a record like this is a major milestone in the life of a musician. It takes many people's cooperation, and they do seem to have some very solid people right behind them. Their promo people, their record company. I'm not sure if it's their company or they're kind of intimately a major part of their record label. And in addition, their video directors. One thing about their videos is they are extremely creative, kind of so good they're made to go viral between the visual appeal and then the music. I don't know how many hits, how many listens and views In Hell I'll Be in Good Company has. Somewhere around it's approaching the hundreds of millions, if it's not there already. And it's the song, but it's also the genius of the directing, where the scene changes every eight beats. It's almost a mock on these pop music videos where they keep changing costumes 20 times, you know, outfits. Only the outfits, they're always dressed with a long bow tie and the whole Southern shtick. And instead of the outfits changing, the scene changes, and the editing is absolutely seamless. And like anybody who has seen it once, I've probably watched this video 50 times. We've included one of their new video from the new release. I forget which song it is on the Planet Waves FM page connected to this edition. You are listening to Planet Waves FM on Pacifica Radio. Tonight's is the edition for the 10th of February 2024. And on my evening of only telling personal stories, I want to tell you the story of a coin called a challenge coin, sometimes called a friendship coin, that I designed for my local police department, the Kingston Police Department, a.k.a. KPD. I've included a photo of the coin on the Planet Waves FM program, both the front and the back. And here's how I came to design a coin for my local police department. Now, a lot of agencies have these coins, and various shades of cops and firemen and FBI agents and EMTs and nurses and various club members of club, you know, different clubs have them. Like, you know, I'm sure you could get a Kiwanis Club coin, and AA has those coins you get. If you make it a year, you get a one-year coin, a two-year coin. Those are also in the challenge coin tradition. I received my first coin from the outgoing Ulster County District Attorney, Holly Carnwright. I've got a friend over there that stayed in his desk through the duration of the alleged pandemic when nobody could enter the building. And then the first time, finally, after all the lockdown stuff and after all the masking and the mandatory injecting and all that was over, I stopped and visited and was, oh, by the way, Holly left this for you on the way out of office. I was very moved by that. It's a beautiful, beautiful coin. So that got me into coins. My attorney is the bagpipe player for the Honor Guard, the Sheriff's Honor Guard. So he has to play at funerals and so forth. The Honor Guard has a coin. That was my second coin. And then I'm like, oh, this is great. So I can't exactly tell you why I love these things so much. It may just be my dragon tendency to like to collect various forms of treasure, but this is modest treasure. And so I thought I want to get a coin made for Chiron Return. So I went on a quest that lasted quite a long time looking for the right vendor to do this coin for me. And you know, you get these companies and they've got 50 people working there and you know, guaranteed personal service. Finally, I emailed someone and I got an email back like 5 minutes later at 2 o'clock in the morning, because I'm often sitting here at 2 o'clock in the morning. As anybody who corresponds with me knows, I can answer email anytime, day or night. And we hit it off right away. We're both night owls and we both loved coins. And I'm not sure what it was, but we just had this something in common. He's down in Georgia, so I thought, here's my coin company. Mom and pop operation. Literally, his parents had the company, and now he runs the company basically for his parents, making all manner of different coins. They just did a Supreme Court coin. And what else? I did the Way Forwards coin there for Alex Zek. Chiron Return gifted to the Way Forward an original, quite a fancy coin. Two double-sided, three-dimensional coin with a wolf on the back. So that was my second coin. The first coin was the Chiron Return coin. So I took the image of Chiron with his bow and arrow, flaming arrow, you know, pointing away from the viewer, and we worked on this coin, and it absolutely came out gorgeous. So, wow, that's my first time working in metal. Very nice. Then came the Way Forwards coin, and then I'm jokingly the national sales manager for Brooks Metalcraft, but there's no sales force really. It's just basically Chris doing his thing all night long, and me being the kind of challenge coin evangelist. So I'm not sure what exactly possessed me to approach the Kingston Police Department, but one day about 4 or 5 months ago, I called them up and I said, can I speak to Chief Tinty? What about? I've got an idea for a coin for KPD. Well, why don't you talk to the guy who handles coins? I'm like, there's a guy. Okay, Ed. So they give me Ed, who has an interesting job. He's part kind of office guy holding it all together, but he's also a member of the SWAT team. So, you know, deployable on 30 seconds notice, 24/7, but he spends most of his days at headquarters just kind of holding shit together. So I get invited over and wait a long time. There was a, you know, never a dull moment. And Ed and I meet, and I take all my coins out of my pocket, my fancy sample bag, in my vest pocket, put them on the table, and he's like, okay, so let's do something. So I said, all right, my concept is on the back of the coin, we put a picture of the Wirt Street Bridge. This is a beautiful suspension bridge tucked into the kind of back roads of Kingston, crossing the Esopus Creek, the little creek that runs. Kingston is kind of surrounded on one side by the Esopus Creek and then on the other side by the Hudson River, and the Esopus flows into the Hudson. So there's this beautiful bridge, and the bridge was in sorry condition. I have driven over that bridge many times and thought, I'm going to come and paint it one night. That's obviously a fantasy. It is impossible to do that. But I thought, anyway, somebody heard my prayer, or there were enough people who had the idea in the first place. And in 2019, where's the, I've got the date on the coin. Let's see. We're on the back of the coins. We did the back first. 2020 to 2024, it took 4 years to rebuild this little teeny suspension bridge. It's like a, I would say it's like a replica of the George Washington Bridge, but it's much prettier. It's much nicer and less imposing. It's just got kind of a sweetness to it, and it's kind of tucked in a little valley, and it's just the perfect little suspension bridge. And this, so, I mean, people bitch and moan about the State Department of Transportation, but they did it up for this renovation. And pretty much, as far as I understand it, every strand of cable has been replaced, and the deck, and it's been stripped and painted and rivets replaced. There was a whole thing with the rivets, like how could they get the right rivets to fix this, and so on and so on. So it's gone on for 4 years. It's about to open. So I knew this thing was about to open. So let's put the bridge on the back of the coin, because it's the most distinctive, iconic thing about Kingston. All the city seals use the half moon with Henry Hudson. It's like, God, boring Henry Hudson. So, okay, that's cool. So then there is this, the best coin in my collection is the New York State Police State Fair Detail coin from 2018. I would like to shake the hand of this artist. This coin is an absolute work of art. It's kind of a circus tent. And I guess for all the guys who missed the fair going with their family because they're working on the state fair detail, they made this beautiful coin. And there was a bit of a PR push that year for the fair and so forth. So that was our inspiration. So I thought, let's not say Kingston Police, let's just say KPD. So I send back a coin with the bridge. We loved it. The bridge art took a month to work out with the artist. They are in China. So I'm instructing them, like, millimeter by millimeter, how to edit a photo of the bridge into an icon of the bridge that will look absolutely recognizable and clear and beautiful on a coin. So I didn't do the rendering, but I meticulously art directed that little thing. And I'm like, wow, we're working in our total space to work is an inch and a half. That's interesting. I know enough about graphic arts to know that you do not want any extra lines in a thing where the final piece is an inch and a half. 1 3/4. The coin is a 2-inch coin. So working on a slightly larger coin. Then on the front, we took KPD, and the first rendering was a little bit boring, and Ed said, no, this has got to be, well, first he wanted to know where the, like, guns and shields and sirens and so forth were. And I said, all right, here's my concept. Let's do the world's only police department coin with absolutely no trappings of power. We all know you guys have the guns and the mace. Let's scratch that part and let's make a piece of art on the front too. So the idea came through KPD with this psychedelic background and then my inscription around the outside edge of the coin. And they loved it. They loved it. So we had to wait till the new budget year to order the coin, and it just sat. The project sat for a few months, and I knew not to hassle them and not be too much of a salesman. And then one day I get an email from Ed and said, all right, we're ready to move on this. So we worked it all out. Now, why would I – and P.S., it came out on Thursday, and you know, I was like a little kid at my P.O. box with an approximately maybe 30-pound box of these coins, and I didn't take a commission. I took my commission in coins, in these challenge coin bling, basically. So Ed came, he picked up his, I'm friends with, through a relative, through family, another guy on the force, a shift supervisor dude, guy named Eric, he stopped. I waited for him. I promised him for my collection he'd get the first one. So great fun. And I've got a lot to give out and kind of spread the word of Challenge Coins. So I've got various different concepts for coins, for different agencies, and I'm a bit of a government wonk. You know, I'm the person who listens to the scanner around the clock. Not quite around. Sometimes I forget it on, but you know, a lot of the day I'm listening, and the thing I'm listening to is people doing their job, taking care of the community. And I read the papers just like everybody else. You know, I'm on the daily news list, and everything's and hearing about all the bad things that happen in the world. And then I listen to the scanner. I listen to the EMS scanner, and I'm listening to police, local 911 dispatch, Thruway State Police, Troop F State Police, and in various counties, listening to people do their job, taking care of the community, doing welfare checks around the clock. Well, if people are worried about someone, if you have a relative you're worried about, you haven't heard from them in a few days, at least around here, you can call the police and ask them to knock on their door and see if they're okay. This is not some kind of a fascist tactic. This is people were worried about their grandmother can call up KPD and say, or any of these local departments, and they will look in on your relative or friend that you are worried about. They're spending the entire day picking up people who've fallen down. There's at least five of those a day. Lift assistance or injuries from a fall. And as a journalist and an editor, I am really impressed by the difference between what I'm hearing going on all day, and I have listened for years. I've listened on and off going back to around 1990. And what I then see in the newspapers and on the internet. And it is painful to me that there is this whole class of people, most of them men, who are out there all day long. And it is not over-dramatizing to say that particularly the police go to work whenever they start their shift, and there's no guarantee that they're coming home. It's not an office job. They know that they're working in an armed nation. The gangs are a real pain in the ass. There's absolutely no respect coming out of there. And this is dangerous and largely thankless work. And we are in times when it is very fashionable to basically just shit on public servants. And I'm not here to say that they're all perfect, but I am here to say that nearly all of them go to work and do an honest day's work helping people. I get that it's annoying to get pulled over, but frankly, at the stage of life I'm at, I have learned how not to get pulled over, and when I do, it's usually a fairly cordial conversation. And I'm glad that there is traffic enforcement. Now, I happen to live in an area where it's not so abusive, as far as I can tell. I mean, I've never heard one thing untoward. I've probably listened for 2,000-3,000 hours carefully. And I've got people teaching me how to decode what's going on, how to know who is talking and what all the little secret code words they have are. I've never heard one thing that I thought, wow, this is... I can't believe this is happening in my community. And it does not mean that things are not happening, but I don't know of any at the moment. And they are few and far between. And most people have absolutely no idea what law enforcement officers have to deal with. I was out delivering coins on Thursday and visiting various agencies where I have acquaintances and contacts, and I overheard one guy talking about how he's still haunted by having to have removed a dead baby from a stream, and another time where he had a partner who was shot who died in his arms, and he has flashbacks to these incidents. There's a there's a second incident with a dead infant also. I worry about these people. And I also worry that it is not healthy that society turns hostile and aggressive on them. Whatever problems there may be with law enforcement, government generally, hostility is not going to solve the problem. If there's protest, the protest, I think, look, I'm here, I'm Mr. Member of the Religious Society of Friends. I'm the one who, yes, I will not pick my ass up off the chair until I'm arrested. If I'm told to leave a meeting and I belong at the meeting, I will make sure someone says you're under arrest, and then we get in the newspaper, and then we have a real conversation after that has happened. I'm not against protest. I'm against vitriolic, bitter, mean, pointless, angry, destructive, stupid protest. I quit my last job in 1989 when I saw students on TV. We had a TV in the office, newsletter office, kicking and screaming, getting arrested in some kind of budget protest. I'm thinking, has anyone given these people proper passive resistance training for when you get arrested at a protest? That was the moment where I said, I'm going back to school. I'm going to start a student newsletter called Student Leader News Service. So I think if there are going to be police, I think we all need to do our part to get along. And I think that citizens need to get to know your local police. All the burdens put on the police to get to know the people, and they do. In any police department I've ever known where I've been close to people in the department, they make an effort to know the people in their community. I attended a university with a university community that had 4,000 more people than the city that I live in now, 27,000 people at SUNY Buffalo, faculty, staff, and students. And public safety, the campus police, unarmed, made it their business to know the students by name in a community of 27,000 students and faculty. So I think that the public needs to reach back. We need to know the names of the officers who patrol our communities. I think that people should visit their police chief and get to know who these people are. Your local fire chief, have you ever stopped in the fire department and the firehouse just to say hi? If you're caught in your house and your house is on fire and your cat is left behind, one of those guys is going to go in there and try to find your cat in a burning building. So I think you should bring them milk and cookies and let's end this bullshit detente between people and local government. And while I'm on the subject, you know, we seem to live in a burgeoning police state, except for one thing. All through the 2020 crisis, well into 2021, I thought we are living under kind of fascist conditions. But the police had absolutely no part in that. The over-the-top behavior, the overreactions, the ridiculousness, the paranoia, the state of utter panic was all coming from the ground. It was all coming from the people. And we have a constitutional sheriff here, Juan Figueroa, who said Thanksgiving 2020 and 2021 said, absolutely no way, no how, we're not arresting people at Thanksgiving dinner, issued a statement. So those who believe that the police are the problem, I think there's another problem, which is a lot of wannabe frantic control freaks who don't carry a shield or a weapon. They just need to relax a little bit. So that's the story of the psychedelic Kingston Police Department challenge coin made in collaboration with Brooks Metalcraft down in Georgia. And I have to say, that was one of the most fun art projects or civic projects that I have ever worked on. All right, so let's go back to the Dead South. One of the things about this band that I just respect the most is that they have this gravitas about them, and they understand that life is not a joyride. They are intimately aware of the tragic nature of much of experience. I think that a lot of what they're doing are essentially writing historical novels from previous periods in American history, despite the fact that they're from Canada. And I said last week that they were in the tradition of Canadians who understand the American heritage better than Americans do. And I forgot to mention who else was in that class. That would be Neil Young and the band tell the stories of the American South and the American West, I think, in the most poignant way that there's a lot of great music about those places. But anyway, this song is called Father John, and it is another in the tradition of kind of sad songs from I'm not sure exactly where this takes place. I will listen as I play to see if there's a cue in the lyrics for the location and the specific era. Maybe you know, and maybe you recognize the lead character, the lead figure in the song. Again, from the Dead South, this is Father John.
Father John was a filthy man, but he loved his God. Sitting by his window late last night, he sang a song about the ways he put them wicked ones away. And on the other side of the mountains where they lay, the other side of the mountains where they'll stay. Rumors on the street, well, I hear they're coming true. That filthy man, he caught him, put him on loose. 'Cause every word he said, the people laid out of his hand. Just one crying word could be dead. Just one crying word could be dead. Thank you. shot him up near Beckett Brook when the crew came riding through. They rounded her up down young boys, chased him through the slough. I heard one drown while the others hung around. Father John caught his prey. With heavy eyes, the mamas, they came to weep. Looking down at their young boys, Father John did reap them away from the land and all the families that they had. And on the other side of the mountains where they lay. The other side of the mountains where they stay.
Dead South, Father John, from their new release, Stakes and Chains. I had, I just re-listened to part of my talk in the last segment, and I go right into thanking their crew and the directors and the promoters and everybody working, but bottom line is their musicianship and the writing are, I think, first class. I know contemporary bluegrass is not for everyone. I happen to like it a lot. And listen to what they're doing. If you go back and let's see if we can find where this is. The first track, the first song that I played begins. I've got to collapse my monitor, screen here. All right, I can't do it. It's not going to work. But anyway, first song, listen to the banjo. Listen to how stylish and absolutely smooth and understated that is. It's not easy to make banjo be tasteful, and they do a very good job of it. Now, in my view, what really makes the sound of this particular group is the cello. There's not a fiddle. There's not a bass guitar or double bass. It's Daniel Kenyon playing a cello, which he can play stand up, standing, with wearing it as a gigantic guitar, basically. And he can play, as he did in the last track, play it as a string instrument with a bow. And both the rhythm bass playing and the bowed bass playing, I think, give the Dead South a very distinct sound that is coming up from the ground. The bass always comes up from the ground and vibrates your heart and vibrates your bones. It shouldn't be that noticeable. It should be, I think, good bass guitar is on the line of liminality, where it just is holding everything together, but you don't necessarily notice, and then when you tune in, it's really, really interesting. And so the use of a cello instead of a guitar gives the sound this kind of beautiful, airy, resonant feeling. So well articulated. Well done. Tour began tonight in Nashville. Good move. So at Grand Ole Opry, this record is going somewhere, and they are going somewhere. Then Monday, they're playing it in Cleveland at Temple Live. On Tuesday, the 13th, in Pittsburgh. The 14th, Valentine's Day, Wednesday, the Fillmore in Silver Spring. Friday at Franklin Music Hall in Philadelphia. Saturday, the 17th, Norfolk. Feb 18, Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Fillmore. That's Fillmore, Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina. Feb 19, Monday, at the Eastern in Atlanta. So they're kind of heading south. Austin City Limits on the 21st in Austin. Feb 22nd, The Factory in Deep Ellum in Dallas. Feb 23rd, Aztec Theater, San Antonio. Feb 26th, Minglewood Hall, back in Tennessee in Memphis. 27th, JJ's Live, Fayetteville, Arkansas. Feb 28th, Kane's Ballroom, Tulsa. This is a busy tour. This is a little Grateful Dead-ish here, huh? And then a couple of weeks off, then they're going to Fremantle, Australia, Metropolis Fremantle Nightclub. If you're in Fremantle, you can see the Dead South. Then Adelaide, Hindley Street Music Hall, Melbourne, at the Forum. Two nights in Melbourne. Then Brisbane at Fortitude Music Hall. 29th, Tiagra, Australia, at Byron Events Farm. Newton, Australia. This is a major Australian tour. Who knew? Then Wellington, New Zealand, two nights. Then to Hamburg. Then Berlin. Then Leipzig. Praha. This is on the deadsouth.com website under tour. High five, guys. I mentioned my little gray people last week. I have had a mouse situation in my apartment and the Planet Waves office downstairs, immediately downstairs, right below where I'm sitting. Usually work up here in the winter. And boy, they are persistent. Now, I carry mouse energy, mouse medicine. Primary totem of mine is the mouse. Everybody wants to be the moose and the eagle and the bear. Well, I am Francis Skunk Mouse, chief of the Skunk Mouse clan. And I love mice. So I have had to handle this situation delicately, a vow to not do harm or poison or trap them, but we have addressed it by cleaning and plugging holes. The cleaning project in the office downstairs, I did not take part in. That was a project. The entire pantry closet, there's a pantry down there, had to be taken apart. I have a VZ spearheaded that project. Then we brought in kind of a cleaner and a mover and a mouse expert, Gregory. We moved file cabinets and plugged holes and cleaned and mopped. And mouse has a very distinct smell. I didn't realize how mousy mouse smells. I've never smelled anything like it. So this basically drove the rest of the clan upstairs to my apartment. More cleaning, more moving guitars, more emptying pantries and putting things together, back together. And then Gregory came over about a week ago. And he's trained in the don't poison them or torture them version of quote-unquote pest control. Now, mind you, I am an admirer of mice, and I'm seeing why I am an admirer of mice. And I've done several satires about mice. I did a Year of the Mouse Chinese astrology satire, making fun of the Ophiuchus thing, like, you're not a Scorpio anymore, you're Ophiuchan. Well, I thought, how would that translate into Chinese astrology? Well, we would insert like a 5-minute year of the mouse right into the year of the monkey, right? And then like a 15-minute or 3-day year of the mouse right into the middle of the year of the dragon. So it's been the year of the mouse around here. So Greg came and he plugged up a bunch of the known portals between the two dimensions, the kind of subterranean netherworld that the mice inhabit and the human world. This disrupted their whole pattern, and then suddenly they were forced in the direction of the remaining openings, which all happened to be behind my stove. So for about a week plus, a little more, I lived with a lot of mice coming and going from my stove now, and on my counter. Now, this would have horrified most people. And I get that it's not sanitary, cleaning up and all that. It's not like they're, you know, infesting the food or anything. And anything that they did has been tossed. But that evening, the shift in their behavior was noticeable because they really only had one way to come out. So a couple of days ago, Gregory came back and we plugged a bunch of things. I've been observing them very carefully and where they come and go from and trying to see if I can tell them apart. That's pretty funny. It's not that easy to tell them apart, but they do look different. They don't all look the same. You know, who says all mice look alike, right? They're similar colors, and the funny thing is they're not very mousy. They are, I think, very powerful, dignified-looking animals. If you really take a look at them, they kind of look like miniature kangaroos or something. And I found out that they really can jump like a lizard. So we do all this work. We pull the stove out. Greg goes back there and plugs all the openings. I follow up, vacuuming, cleaning up all the tiles and wiping down all the surfaces back there that needed to be cleaned. I love heavy cleaning, that kind of heavy cleaning. So we put it all back together, and then there were still mice running around. So Greg's theory was, well, there were going to be a couple left hiding. Either they have a point of access or there were a couple of stragglers. So last night I went to Walmart. I'm like, I've got to deal with this. So I went look on the internet and I found these little tidy little cruelty-free little mini have a heart traps. And they sent me to the pesticide section in the grocery side of Walmart. I'm not a big Walmart shopper, but if you need mouse traps at 9 o'clock at night. So then I had to figure out that I went back in the part you're not supposed to go in and had a hilarious conversation with the guys, one of whom recommended that I get an owl. But that's a great idea. So they didn't sell owls. So I had to go over to location like 9H in the Lawn and Garden Center where they did have these cruelty-free mousetraps. I brought a bunch of them and I baited them with almond butter and set them up. And I took my biggest cooking pot. I'm an Aquarius moon, so I have big cooking pots. And I lined it with paper towels and got ready, found the lid, got ready for, you know, the mousetraps. Well, so I've got two in captivity currently. I'm not sure what to do with them. I'm waiting for spiritual guidance what to do with them. I don't understand the social order of mice, and I really don't want to put them outside, away from their people in the cold and the rain. So I'm just waiting in instructions. And I also want to know the mouse population, like how many actually are there. So I have, now that I've got these two, I have not seen any others. So I want to really make sure that we've just caught a couple of stragglers. So that's my mouse story. And I've been studying them, and it's not entirely untrue to say that I like to have them, but it's not a good thing in the human realm to have that particular type of scavenger running around. But they are highly intelligent. They are so determined. They are organized. They take things back to their stash. Did you catch the viral video of the mouse that cleans up the guy's workbench? He would come back to his workbench every morning, and the workbench would be organized, like all the little bits of jetsam and flotsam would all be put away. And nobody came in, so he set up an infrared camera and has video footage that was pretty viral and genuinely deserved to be of a mouse organizing his workbench. Perfectly sincere. They have such sincere expressions on their face. And putting all the little things way where they belong. This is caught on camera. I did not have the patience to do a video. I was going to do a video last night of like, okay, now we're going to catch these mice and let's see what we do with them. I will have guidance sometime soon, like exactly where to put these people. I'd like to put them back in the part of the building that they belong in, because there's got to be a lot of other ones down there. And I feel bad about them not having food, so I have to kind of get over that. And I can't feed them. That's not right. It's going to attract other bugs and stuff like that. So anyway, that's my Year of the Mouse story, told by Francis Skunk Mouse. You didn't know that I was a famous shaman? Francis Skunk Mouse. Speaking of shamanism-ish stuff, I'm embarking on a Chiron project. I have worked with Chiron as a basic foundation of my astrology since around 1994. I was at the end of investigative journalism career 1.0, and I answered an ad in the Mountain Astrologer for an astrology editor named Lori Burnett. She's the co-author of Pluto, Evolutionary Journey of the Soul. She's Jeff Green's ex-wife, and she put that book together. It wouldn't be a book without Lori Burnett. So if you're a fan of Pluto, Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, you have Lori Burnett to thank, and you can write to her in care of me, and I'll send it along. And she said, in one of our first conversations, she said, well, if you like Pluto, you will love Chiron. So I forthwith got Rainbow Bridge, Chiron, Rainbow Bridge Between the Inner and Outer Planets by Barbara Hand Clow, who I did get to know somewhat. We didn't talk too much about Chiron. We talked about other things, but not so much about Chiron. But that's the book that I went from not being able to read a chart to being able to read a chart halfway through the book. Halfway through. I read the rest of it. And I've just copied the entire section on Chiron through the signs this morning and started reviewing it. But being made hip to Chiron opened up my ability to read just like that. Then I got to know Melanie Reinhardt. That was a few years later. I connected with Melanie in 1998. How many years ago is that? That would be 26 years ago. Good heavens. When I was traveling in Germany, and I got a copy of... Well, no, before that, I read Chiron and the Healing Journey. I mean, this is a substantial work of astrological literature. In the world of astrology books, which were a thing at a previous time, this is... You know, the grapes of wrath of astrology books. A major analysis of Chiron from a spiritual and psychological standpoint. We became fast friends in 1998. I was in Germany, living in Germany. I wrote to her And behold, she wrote back like she was expecting me, like we already knew each other. I think, wow, I'm not really anyone special. And she's being very gracious, answering all my questions. And of course, I was a good student of her work. And Melanie has been advising me on this project called Eye of the Centaur. Apologies to Barbara Cloud. That's one of her past life channeling book titles. I'm using it for a series of video readings on Chiron, Eye of the Centaur. And I'm trying not to be intimidated by this. I want to have it out by early March, at least stage one. And I'm proceeding in earnest. If I set my mind to things, I can get them done pretty good on time. So last night I sat with Tracy Delaney's Chiron print ephemeris that she made for my workshop at Omega Institute in 2008. So we can have a printable Chiron ephemeris. I can link to that at some point. But if you Google Chiron print ephemeris, please don't use a phone. And her website doesn't support phones. Thank God somebody doesn't support phones. Chiron print ephemeris, it'll come right up. But last night I read every month of the ephemeris. Exciting reading. It's like doing a reading of a train schedule. But the orbit of Chiron is much, much more interesting than any train schedule. So I started in 1940. I thought, all right, let's start. And then I met a guy today born in 1939. So I've got to add 1939 for my new friend, Steve Abrams. And study the movement of Chiron every year to the present. Now, it's not a day-by-day listing. It's a crude listing with a link to Tracy's website and then to astro.com to cast your chart. Now, the concept of Eye of the Centaur is a combination of a spring video reading, which we've done every year for many years. And it's going to focus on the total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron. Total solar eclipse conjunct Chiron. I can't believe anything like that's ever happened, and I can't believe anything like that's going to happen anytime again in this eon. April 8th, 2024. It's going to come just north of here. I'm going to get in my car that morning or the night before and head up and watch the shadow go by. I've never seen total solar eclipse. I've seen two annular eclipses, one in Valencia and one here in the Hudson Valley. So we're going to do a sign by sign, sun sign, rising sign analysis of the eclipse and the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in Taurus, which takes place 12 days later. That's the typical kind of spring reading thing that I would do. Approximately 40-minute readings for each, not quite as long as somewhere in between. But an expansion of rereading of a fresh look at these same things I read twice and somewhere in between, written and then video. Then I'm adding three things. First, a video introduction to Chiron. Two, a presentation on Chiron through the signs. That popped to life this morning, thinking how am I going to make this succinct? And the house is so important, the natal house placement. You've got to look that up yourself if you're interested. But I reread Barbara Hand Clow's chapter on Chiron through the signs, and from there I got my own theory. I've had to handle this. Meanwhile, dialoguing with Melanie over the past couple of days on the question of Chiron as an inner planet and Chiron as an outer planet. So in phases like approximately 1940 through 1947, Chiron is inside the orbit of Saturn. Then it goes back to being an outer planet for 35 years. Then it becomes an inner planet again, crosses inside the orbit of Saturn, right? It goes a little bit slower than Jupiter, At its fastest, takes about 18-20 months to go through a sign. Jupiter consistently takes 12. And then there's another phase from 1990 approximately through 1999, a 9-year stretch approximately, where Chiron, these are not exact dates, don't quote me, the exact data is known, but where Chiron moves very quickly, just like it did during World War II, in the early 90s, it whips through Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, and Scorpio in a very short time. Then it slows back down again in Sag, Cap, Aquarius, Pisces, Aries, and Taurus, where it is on that side of the solstice. Now, so I'm going to do, I've got a new theory of Chiron, the inner planet, Chiron, the outer planet. Melanie has great stuff on this. Barbara has very astute, she is a heck of an astrologer. Very astute material on this, and I got my theory today. I wrote to Melanie immediately. I was like half asleep, and I thought, that which is taken for granted, that which is seemingly missing. Wrote to her. I haven't heard back yet. Looking forward to her response to my theory. Chiron as an inner planet, that which is taken for granted. Chiron as an outer planet, that which is seemingly missing. I will elaborate on that, but that's what I'm going to be doing. That's the spring reading, spring fundraiser for Planet Waves. And my plan is that this is the beginning stages of work on a Chiron book. I always feel like I owe the world a lot, which I probably don't. But one of the things I feel like I do owe it to myself to do is to really compile the best of my work on Chiron. And I have worked on Chiron with somewhere between 1 and 2,000 clients. So I have developed an approach and a theory. I work very well with the group of the first five centaurs, Chiron, Nessus, Pholus, Cariclo, and Aspolus. Okoro's fun too. She's Chiron's daughter. And that is what is forthcoming. So I'm going to be studious while I'm doing the somewhere in between personal readings. And suddenly I'm a very popular astrologer. All of a sudden people are reaching out to me for readings in numbers I have not seen since the earliest part of my career. So that's wonderful. It's good to be back on the map and to have, continue to not only survive, but I think thrive as an astrologer in this world where there is so much that is so fragile. But of course, that is a theme of Chiron. And as far as I'm concerned, here is the bottom line of Chiron as an historical phenomenon in astrology. Chiron, the use of Chiron, Chiron being the child of Cronos and Philyria, raised by Apollo, taught medicine by Apollo, taught Asclepius, the god of medicine, medicine and surgery. So Chiron was the initiator of the god of medicine and surgery. In French, chirurgie is C-H-E-I-R. I'm not sure the spelling in French, but it has the name Chiron in it, and the word in English that nods to Chiron is chiropractic. So Chiron is the initiator of the healing arts, and it's not the AMA. They don't want anything to do with him. They do not like that guy. He's a big horse with a man's body and hands. He's an herbalist, initiator, diviner, teacher, and part of battlefield medicine, right? He's teaching warriors how to, tend to the wounded in battle. Teacher of Achilles, of Jason, major figure in history. He was almost forgotten at the time of Chiron's discovery, and the discoverer, Charlie Kowal, whose job was to download photos from the Hubble Space Telescope every morning when he came to work. Yes, that is what Charles Kowal did. The non-existent fictional Hubble Space Telescope, the discoverer of Chiron, Charles Kowal, K-O-W-A-L, Charlie, we love you, also was an astronomer and major discoverer of planets. And he discovered this massive comet nucleus in this place where no one thought there could ever be a planet. So Chiron is part planet, part asteroid, part comet. Astrology picks up on this. And what Chiron brings into astrology is the healing tradition. It's no longer just about where did the shipment of fish go, the famous chart from William Lilly from Christian astrology, right? Now, will the little kitty cat, will it be found? Leo rising. Again, William Lilly. Will the money come? Right? Astrology was and is a divination art. The most complicated, says Rob Hand. Yeah, that's an understatement. But Chiron brings in something that had not been there. Chiron takes astrology out of the realm of the fortune-telling realm, the purely divinatory realm, out of the mysticism and the spirituality realm, and brings it into the healing tradition. And Melanie, of course, wrote the book, Chiron and the Healing Journey, her second book, Saturn, Chiron, and the Centaurs to the Edge and Beyond. She helped pioneer this, as did Zane Stein, the author of the first book on Chiron. Ermine Lantero, author of the second book on Chiron. Barbara Henclow takes a more Uranian view of Chiron, but she's more in the initiatory, Chiron as the initiator. She embodies that energy. But I think that astrology before and after Chiron is astrology that is now open to being a healing art, helping people solve their wounding and their pain, and to recognize the gifts that their injuries have given to them. The teacher that is pain, and the initiation property of Chiron is often something about a kind of a shamanic wounding process. This is not ordinary wounding. It is the wounding that transcends the victim mode of wounding and is into you would not be who you are had you not experienced this injury. And so it allows and facilitates a recasting of, a reevaluation of life experiences that show us what we have learned through this journey of abundant injury in life. Right? Everyone's carrying injury. Everyone's carrying some psychological or physical or emotional scar, something missing, some abandonment, some crisis that they, you know, that maybe keeps manifesting that they don't understand. And the way that you work with Chiron is you work with the transit events. Those tell what the natal placement is about. Yes, you can say, well, Chiron in the fifth house is seeking experience and it's going to be some form of creative and sexual experience, but you've got to get experience and you can advise the client on that level. Yeah, that's nice. That's not actually where Chiron emerges. Where Chiron emerges is in studying the events of the transits, first each as distinct events, and then you look at the theme of the entire story. One of the things I do with many of my clients is, I used to do this in like a 90-minute session. Now I do it as a kind of a questionnaire. And I list off 10 Chiron transits and then ask them to journal it. And then we know exactly what we're talking about from that history. All right, that is my program for you for this week. I may be back with the Agony Edition. I'm interviewing Elsa Reiner Filmic's handler, the person who's kind of doing the public relations for Reiner Filmic. She has a Substack. It's probably pretty easy to find. Just Google Elsa Reiner Filmic. I've got a call with her at 11, a Zoom with her at 11 on Sunday morning. I'm going to take apart the latest production of Robert F. Kennedy and Mary Holland from Children's Health Defense, which is this gloomy, doomy, spooky, gain-of-function science fiction fantasy that they're having about COVID. You may recall I've been covering Robert F. Kennedy now, how many years? Two? Three? This Fakakta thing he's got going on with not addressing the missing virus problem. So that's in there also. And there's a few others. The usual Planet Waves FM. All right, here's what's going on. I'm sorry that this is so painful. Let's talk about the implications of this as we continue on this journey that to me, you know, every day that goes by, it's feeling a little bit more like a ride on a bubble, and there is a lot of jockeying for power and wealth and influence going on the billionaire, trillionaire class in that kind of in that sphere. And this is what is putting the pressure on the rest of us. I mean, there's plenty for us. Most of us don't consume that much. I don't care how many cars you have. There's only so much gas you can burn. There's only so many, you know, whatever, meals you can eat. I'm talking about the massive players who are, you know, wondering what is going to happen to the dollar if the oil runs out and suddenly the petrodollar has no meaning, and where'd all the gold go? And so forth and so on. So, you know, we continue to live in this very, very delicate time. And maybe it is growing old, but I am learning the art of living one day at a time. And despite the fact that I have a schedule and produce work for you on a consistent basis, asking myself, okay, what is the thing that I want and need to do with this day today? And you've heard about my first day of the year of the Laughing Dragon. Pretty good day. Made some friends, had some fun, visited the Stone Church Gorge. And tonight is another evening. Let's end the program with one more from the Dead South. I have a good mind to get in my car and go to one of these shows coming up soon. Anybody in Philadelphia listening? You in Philadelphia? If you're in Philly, please shoot me an email, efc@chironreturn.org. If you want, you can even leave a message at 845-481-5616. That'll bounce to email, so it's good to get me two ways. So 845-481-5616 or efc@chironreturn.org. This is called A Little Devil. It is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to join in the album tour release launch push for the Dead South. I have a spiritual connection to one of the members of the band, and it's a kind of a focal point. It's not just the musicianship. It's not just their deep, deep stuff. One of the guys in the band is friendly to dogs, if you know what I mean. This is called A Little Devil. Thanks for joining me. Lots of love. And bye for now.
Just a little devil in disguise.